Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Perfect Imbalance. On this show, we bring together conversation and expertise. My name is Jeff Way, and I'm the founder of Perfect Imbalance, the first podcast to challenge the myth of work-life balance and explore alternatives for improving overall well-being. Each week, I'll be interviewing different thought leaders, elite sports performers and entrepreneurs to understand how they are achieving happiness, success and greater fulfillment in their lives. So here's to you, the listeners, joining us each week. Welcome to Perfect Imbalance. On this episode, I share my interview with Nina Grunfeld, founder and creator of Life Clubs and a woman of many other talents. During our conversation, we look back over the last 15 years from the inception of Life Clubs in 2004, where the idea originally first came to Nina, having read an article which pointed out that 30-year-olds were the most depressed group of people in society. Life Clubs have been in operation since then and growing across the UK, where they run regular monthly meetings and bring people together for all manner of reasons. Nina talks as well on this episode around comparisons with Richard Branson. We also touch on a link back to Star Wars and get into the conversation around Nina's first book on stain removals, which actually sold 1 million copies. Nina is an absolutely fascinating person, and I know you're going to enjoy this episode. Here's Nina. Nina, thank you very much indeed for agreeing to come on the show. It's an absolute pleasure to be able to spend some time with you, so thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. I'm looking forward to it too.
Fabulous. Now, I like to dive straight in with each of my guests and get their thoughts on work-life balance. So, Nina, what's your thoughts on work-life balance?
Oh, I don't know. I'm a bit of an obsessive worker. I absolutely love it. I think I don't see it as work-life balance. I think I see it as life balance. We have something we call a balance chart, which is shows sort of the 10 areas of life. So everything from, you know, your home and your rest and relaxation and spirituality, just all the things that a life consists of. And we think about how balanced we are in each of those areas. And that feels, there are 10 of them in total, that feels more right to me, because it's not just about work and life. That means it sounds like they've got equal, that they're sort of equal weight on the scales, doesn't it? So I think it's about lots of different things. And sometimes you just want to have a balance of working only. I mean, I had something I really had to do this weekend, and most of my weekend was working or sleeping. I love sleeping. So it's really, to me, it's about all the different things that constitute your life rather than just work and life. But I definitely think balance is important, but the balance that you want rather than the balance that maybe you feel you ought to have.
It does. And I think for me, that epitomizes and sums up where balance is today versus perhaps where it was in the past, and how we viewed balance from very much a work or a life perspective. And it's changed. And, you know, it's having that awareness, which you've alluded to there, that you know, said, you know, your weekend has been all about work and sleep, and that's okay. And if we're not careful, what happens is we look at that through the lens of the old model, and we start to beat ourselves up a little bit or add additional pressure to us, when actually it's just having that awareness that there will be a number of areas at any one point that we may well gravitate towards to and find balance in. So absolutely perfect, Nina.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I'm just very aware of what I suppose I want to do at any one time. So, you know, And I'm quite organized. So I sort of think, well, okay, you know, now I'm looking forward to having a chat to Jeff, and then I've got to be here at this time. So I'm quite, I hate being late. So I sort of plan everything quite perfectly, in a sense, just to make sure that I've got time for everything that I want to do. And that's the balance that I suppose I want at any given moment of any day.
Me too. Being late is something that I avoid on a regular basis, much to the frustration of my eldest two children, who always ask me, Dad, why are we here early?
Yeah, but that I grew up with two parents, one who was always early and one who was always late. And I realized that punctuality, earliness was just much more important to me. And I remember one of the things that made me decide that my husband was the man for me was whenever this is obviously way before mobile phones, but we'd agree to meet, you know, under the clock at a certain time, and we'd be walking up to that clock at that same time. And I thought, oh, that'd be wonderful. I don't want to wait for anyone ever again. So it's, yes, that's very important to me, punctuality. We get on well.
Beautiful. Now, for the listeners who are wondering who you are and what you do, Nina, can you describe what it is that you do and why people either want to work with you or interact with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So the company that I founded in 2004 is called Life Clubs. And they are, Life Clubs, I suppose, host workshops that help people really feel as positive as they can, so they have more fun out of life, and they also are more productive as a result. But they're workshops that really help you feel good, using all sorts of things, like, you know, from coaching, NLP, just listening techniques, and people work in pairs, helping each other. So it's very British, it's very private, these clubs. You're not expected to tell everyone everything. And they came about really because I read an article in the paper in sort of 2002, 2003 about 30-year-olds being the most depressed sector of society. And I remember looking back and thinking, gosh, yeah, my 30s were quite tricky. Lots of big decisions to be made. And how can I help those 30-year-olds? And someone walked in talking about Weight Watchers. And I went, of course, you know, I can create these clubs thinking about life, not about weight. And we can start them around the country. Of course, I'm always an optimist. Far more difficult to do that than anything else. So we've since then sort of worked for the NHS, and then we started working in corporates. So we take our clubs into corporates, or we write clubs for them to run, or something like that. So it's definitely about people helping each other, supporting each other, and finding out about themselves.
Wow. You've answered a number of questions there that I wanted to explore with you in terms of how Life Clubs have come about. Nina, I want to take you back just a little bit before that article that you read in 2002, 2003. What were you doing at that time? And had you had any thinking around, you know, creating something like you have done?
No, not really. No, I mean, I trained as a graphic designer. I've had a wonderful life, actually. I trained as a graphic designer. And I left sort of after college. I went to join my brother in the States. He'd been living and working there, and we drove across the States. And I arrived in LA, and I thought, oh, I'd absolutely love to live here. And so I said, look, I'm leaving you. He was going back to England. I'm going to see if I can try and get a job. And luckily, I got a job. Well, I thought I'd like to work in the film industry, and went for an interview with this lady who was working on the Star Wars logo. This is a long, long, long time ago. It was one of the very early logos. And she said, oh, I think this guy I know would love your work. So he was in the record business. So I ended up working at Electra Asylum first in the art department, and then I moved to CBS and just had a great time, and then came back to England and started a graphics business with someone I'd been at art college with. And that didn't really work out. I think we both had different expectations of what the other one was going to do. And so, so I sort of, whilst I was there, I started writing a book. At college, we had a project on stain removal, and I'd done a little book for it. And so I thought, well, I'll write that and just see what happens. So that was my very first book, was on stain removal. So that's my deeply practical side. And it sold over 1 million copies. And I thought, well, I rather like this idea of writing helpful books. So that's really what I did most of my life. But my hobby was always helping friends find what would be a really lovely thing for them to do, what their purpose in life was. And so I would work with them, I don't know, just really intuitively, just kind of looking at them. I mean, I don't know whether it's a game only I play or whether other people have played it as well, but when you meet someone new, just looking at them and guessing what their life's like, I suppose a bit of a Gypsy Rose Lee. So I did that, but not just guessing what their life was like, but guessing where I thought their life should be, as it were. And so that was really, I decided, having written like about 20 books, I thought, I had my fourth child, and I thought there's too much in my head with all these books, and I want to be able to concentrate a little bit more on my child. And so I thought, well, I will use my intuitive skills and work with people a little bit more. And so that's what I was doing. I trained to be a life coach then, and was really just helping people using intuition and just, yes, and sort of coaching skills too by that stage. So that's what I was doing when I read the article.
Wonderful. Well, I'm still trying to get over the stain removal book that sold a million copies. Is that still in circulation? Or
I don't think so. No, it was called Spot Check. And I did it with my old teacher. He was a wonderful illustrator. And I said, you know, this was your idea. Why don't you come and join me and do it? So we kind of created it together. I did the writing and he did the illustration, and the design was sort of based partly around the project that I'd done at art college. So it was really nice to work with someone who I so admired. And just, yeah, it was not me at all. But I mean, it was just got me into the world of research and books and how books work, and it was a good first step. Unfortunately, none of my other books have sold that well, but there we are. Can't have everything, can you? It only cost a quid, so it was an easy buy at that time. It was a long time ago, but it was an easy spend.
Fantastic, Nina. There's a real energy about you, and a real passion as well as intuition, which you've talked about. What were those early life club meetings like when you settled on the idea and you put it out there and you started, you know, inviting people along? What were those first few like for you?
Oh, well, gosh, about 100% different from what they're like now. I mean, first of all, I thought, I'm going to invite friends who can help me. So I sort of, you know, either business people or very heavily networked people. And I got them together and I said, we're going to talk about a particular topic, whatever it was. I think our very, very first one was about decluttering. And I prepared a little kind of speech, if you like, about, you know, clutter and how to get rid of it. And then we had supper. And that was as simple as that. That's all it was. And then after that, we sort of slowly sort of started to say, well, let's put people in groups so they can talk about it together, about whatever topic it was. And then slowly the questions became bigger and bigger. And the questions, the coaching is now a much bigger part of the workshop than it was then. So it's, it's really interesting how things change, isn't it? You start off and, I mean, they were quite expensive because no one paid anything to come, and I cooked them a lovely meal. And so it was a win-win really for them and for me, because they, gave me a lot of hints and tips. And when I did start for real, a lot of them came back and bought friends and things. So that was great.
And where they are today, just give us an idea in terms of how many of these clubs are running. It's not just throughout the UK, is it? I believe you've got a foothold in other parts of the world as well.
Yeah, but in a very low-key way, I'd say. We're really concentrating on I always say I'm a bit like Richard Branson without the sort of massive success, because he tends to kind of get bored quickly, I feel. I mean, I don't know him at all, but his Virgin has kind of spread out horizontally. So from planes to music to, you know, everything you can think of, banking. I mean, it's very sort of horizontal, rather than shooting up like a rocket, as you expect a business to do that really focuses. And I think I'm like that. So I'm always in danger of spreading myself far too thinly. So the idea has been to not, you know, first it was, oh, let's go abroad, let's, you know, do this. And now I only do things really when people ask. I find it difficult to say no when someone says, oh, I want to bring your clubs to Luxembourg. I think, oh, how exciting. But actually, I'm not proactively looking for going abroad, but we are proactively looking for people to run them here. So we've got about 12 clubs in the UK, mainly in the southeast, but one in Frome and one in South Shields, which is very exciting. The lady who runs it in Brixton in London, her parents live in South Shields, so she travels to them once a month and runs a club there. So we now are monthly rather than weekly, and we're 3 hours, because the effects are so positive the more you have, that we really wanted to give people a sort of big injection of change rather than just a 90 minutes, which also works, I mean, but isn't, it's a bit of a sort of lunch and learn in a corporate, but it doesn't give you that same sort of huge, what we call life bulb moment as the longer ones do.
What are people saying and more importantly doing differently when they've come to one of the clubs and experienced what you provide and the thoughts that you provoke?
Well, it's really different. I mean, the difference between it and Weight Watchers, even though I imagine they could be quite similar, is that Weight Watchers has one, back to Richard Branson, Weight Watchers has one target, you want to lose weight. Whereas Life Clubs, some people will come because they're feeling very confused. Some people will come because they want to lose weight. Some people will come because they feel they need more of a social life. We get quite a lot of people who've worked very hard and are feeling like their life has sort of, you're talking about that work-life balance, you were talking about that their life part of their balance has not really happened. And then we've got people who have a great life but who haven't really found their purpose. So all sorts of people come. So just to tell you, like at the end of one of the years, so there are 12 workshops in a year, one a month, and at the end of 1 year, we had more or less the same people that start at the beginning, that you don't have to, you could just come once if you want, or twice, or whatever you want. But you know, one of them was a television presenter, and she'd been asked to go on the BBC leadership course, so that was very exciting. Another one, when she'd first arrived, she'd got small children and she'd left her phone behind, left my address behind, left everything behind, and by the end she'd just walked in having just come from a stylist. She had got a fantastic job, she looked incredible. So that was her. Another one had lost 3 stone and was looking, cut all her hair off, was looking sort of glamorous, and it was an elderly lady looking really wonderful. I'm just trying to think who else was there, but I mean, you can get the idea. Everyone wanted something different. So, you know, some people were looking for a job and to be organized. Some were looking for weight. Sometimes people think they want to get a new job, but in fact they want to move home. So you never quite know what's going to happen. You can arrive thinking one thought and something else happens. But I mean, it's nothing scary. It's a slow change, and which is what you'd expect, really. But it is definitely very, very positive, I'd say, what happens to people.
I love that. And I know when we spoke previously, I was curious to understand it a little bit more, because it sounds like there's some really great stuff that's happening, you know, with the people within these clubs, and almost communities are being created in terms of how people support and encourage one another. Is Life Clubs where you expected it to be when you launched in 2004, so 15 years on, or have you gone with the flow and adapted and changed accordingly? I'm interested to get your thoughts on where you see it today versus that tiny acorn of a thought that you developed and put out there in 2004.
Gosh, well, I'm unfortunately not a business person, Jeff, so it wasn't at all. I mean, I think I imagined it growing the way that Weight Watchers did, and as I knew almost nothing about Weight Watchers growth, that was probably not a great idea. So I sort of imagined that there would be, you know, hundreds of clubs around the UK, and it would be a sort of thriving local clubs. And it hasn't really worked like that. I mean, in the end, for me personally, I'm very torn. I love the local clubs because I love that people come who really want to be there, as opposed to in a corporate environment where you often get people who have been asked to come or, you know, don't really know what to expect. But actually, a lot of the work that we get from the corporate world is very, very exciting. So I get asked to create a lot of sort of management training or, sort of books about the values and behaviours of an organisation. I get pushed into areas that I don't imagine, never thought about, never even knew about before. So creatively, and I think I am what they call a creative, creatively I find it very, very exciting. And I hadn't even imagined that we'd be doing anything in the corporate sector. So that's been very exciting. I mean, the latest thing, back to Richard Branson, the latest thing we're doing is I've created 6 workshops that are very simple to run so that you don't need anyone running them. And they're for the charity sector. So not necessarily the people who run the charities, but for the people who are in, you know, their client base, if you like. So whether it's carers, whether it's children in a youth hostel, whether it's university students. So not that universities are charities, but just a kind of groupings that are in society that wouldn't normally get the kind of work we do. That's really what I'm hoping to get involved in next, because I do think that the tools that I've learned over the years are so useful for people. And I mean, our clubs are sort of, if you're on a concession, they're £28.50 for 3 hours. So they're a very reasonable. And if you're not, you can still buy, you know, 12 workshops. I think they come to something like £36 each. I mean, they're not expensive, but they are still too expensive for anyone on benefits or anyone young or anyone who isn't earning. So I'm kind of hoping to help those people next. And so we're starting a trial in September. So if anyone who's listening to this might be interested in any aspect of what we do, yeah, please do get in touch either through me or Jeff or whoever. But that's, so I, the answer is no, I didn't expect it at all. I mean, the only thing that was similar in a sense when I started, I'd had a column in the Daily Telegraph before, and I got another column in the Telegraph. They called it Get a Life, which I thought was slightly rude, but anyway, people definitely read it. So that was quite fun. And I also wrote sort of four books about personal development, and I enjoyed doing that as well. So yeah, it's been a very different journey to the one I expected, but in a way I'm glad, because it's been fun, but I would love there to be more local clubs, because you just really can see how they help people.
It's fascinating, you know, listening to you, Nina, talk about, you know, where it started and how it's, you know, transferred over into the corporate world, and now you're looking at, you know, what you do with charities and also students at university. Why do you personally put so much focus into creating, you know, the work that you are for different groups of people? What's your purpose in effect?
Well, I think it's got to be sort of making people feel happier. I had quite a sort of sad childhood, and I've loved life the older I've got, and so I suppose it's trying to help others not have to go through the same sort of sadnesses that I went through, if that makes sense. I think that would be my purpose, and yeah, to just make the world a slightly happier place. I mean, especially at the moment, it just can feel very out of control, and I want people to feel more that they are in control of their lives rather than life is tossing them about, which does happen a lot. I don't know whether you feel that, but you can just really sometimes feel like, oh my goodness, what's going on? And I'd like people to feel there is a sort of something that they can do, that they're not just being thrown about by fate.
Absolutely. I think right now it's as confusing and as unsettling as it perhaps ever has been. And this lack of control or feeling of control, it isn't helpful in a lot of cases. Mm. Have there been any particular encouragers or any of your own strengths or traits that have allowed you to evolve and adapt this as you have done, Nina?
Well, there have been loads of encouragers. I mean, absolutely loads. Just really, I suppose, almost everyone I've met, actually, you know, people either want to come and start a club or they'll come along to a club. People are very, very kind and helpful and enthusiastic about it as well. I think for a lot of people, it sort of touched a nerve, which is nice. Yeah, and is that in terms of my strengths? Oh God, I think I'm just stubborn and dogged and determined, and you know, I work really hard. And yes, I think my values, my values, I've got a value of legacy. And, you know, lots of people would say, well, you've got four children, isn't that enough? But it's not enough. That will be their legacy, whatever they decide to do. I think it's really wanting to change the world in some small way that people will say, oh, yes, you know, Nina really wanted to do something that would affect people and make them think differently and feel differently. So, yes, I think it's all those things. I hope that's helped.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the fact that you've shared, you know, one of your values there around legacy, because, you know, from the outside looking in, you'd be regarded as a successful, you know, human being. Entrepreneur now is the word that we tend to use more often than not. You've been the founder of Life Clubs, author of four self-development books, as well as, I think you said, another 15 other books. You could argue that there's a legacy there already, but I sense from you, and I suspect from you, Nina, that's part of it, but not all of it, that there's still more work to be done. Am I right in that thinking?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I don't know about you, but whenever I've achieved something, I tend to kind of disregard it. And, you know, I look over my old books and I think, oh God, they were awful or whatever, you know, and I know they weren't at the time. But so I think there's always a sort of questing for more, that, you know, what else can I do? How else can I affect people? You know, what's the best way of doing it? Yeah, I probably, my great aunt was in her early hundreds in her old people's home as a psychotherapist, still working when she died. And I think that is amazing that she's probably one of my greatest role models, that, you know, she was so wonderful and wise and always interesting, always, always interesting until she died. And I just think, oh yes, you know, that would be just great to be able to be that person. So it's something about keeping going and not sort of, the word retirement doesn't really work for me. So it's what can I do? Keep myself out of mischief, I suppose. Yes.
I suspect you'll keep yourself in a bit of mischief as well. along the way. But you touched on another thing there in terms of retirement, and I think, you know, in a lot of cases that model of retirement now is broken and has been broken for a while. And I think we all know people who have arrived at retirement expecting to live a life or fulfill those goals or dreams that they put on hold, only to realize very quickly that that's not always the case, and they find themselves isolated or indeed in some cases in no fit state to be able to enjoy retirement. So I'm kind of glad on a personal level that retirement is broken, albeit it'll be a bit of a shock for some people.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And I mean, I met someone at a party the other day who was saying, oh, you know, my children are at Glastonbury and I really want to go and experience it. And I just thought, I'm so lucky. I mean, I did all the traveling. I did all the you know, the concerts, whatever, the festivals. I mean, I did a lot when I was younger. And so I don't really feel the need to do that. I probably feel the need to do what I didn't do so much of when I was younger, which was sort of work terribly hard. I think I probably was a little bit lazier at school than I, bit more rebellious than maybe I might have been. So I think we do flip round, sort of, you know, she wanted to be naughtier and have more fun. And I kind of feel it's time for me to get on and do a bit of work. So who knows? I don't think either's right or wrong, but it's just which way your life went, really.
No, absolutely. I agree. Where do you see your biggest opportunity going forward to either support organisations, teams, individuals, charities in the future? Where's your biggest opportunity, Nina?
Gosh, I don't know whether, when you say opportunity, do you mean financial, or do you mean the most people, or do you mean me feeling happier, or I don't know, what do you mean by opportunity?
That's a good shout. That's a good question back to me. How about in the context of your legacy, where do you see the biggest opportunity to add to your legacy in the future?
Well, I don't know. I kind of think probably even though the corporate work is fun, I don't know that you leave a particular legacy through that. I think that's always more the people working in the organization. Though I suppose, you know, if I wrote a leadership manual or something, maybe I could do something like that. But probably in the local clubs or even in the charity sector, just creating something that wasn't created before. I mean, we've had a lot of copiers since we started, a lot of whom are more successful than I am, just because they're much more focused on one thing. But I think probably we're still the only people doing exactly what we do, and that there might be a reason for that, but probably that's ultimately what will leave the legacy. I don't know, but that's what I'm guessing. I mean, so much has happened in the last 15 years. I have no idea what's going to happen in the next 15. So we shall just have to see. But I look forward to the adventure anyway.
And I sense that from you. Okay, what's currently exciting you on a personal level in the wellbeing development space?
I think So what isn't exciting me is all these apps that come out. And I think even though a lot of them are probably incredibly useful, I think I just wrote something for LinkedIn about, you know, people burying themselves in their phones. And I mean, I the other day I had an interesting thing happen because I don't know about you, but when I walk down the street and people just bump into me the whole time because they're on their phones. And I have that kind of feeling that I'm invisible. And then I was in my car and I realized that people were still walking in front of my car. And I thought, well, the car's clearly not invisible. So it's actually nothing about me at all. It's just the way that we are at the moment. We're all looking at our phones the whole time. And so I suppose what excites me is the fact that people will want to, this is a blip. And people will realize that, you know, the phone is important, but it's not going to provide them with everything. And they'll look forward to face-to-face meetings again. I mean, I know my children, they you know, I've heard from them and from some of the students who work with us that you know, they'll go to a party to be with their friends. They won't meet new people. And I think that whole meeting of people, spontaneity, random things happening, you know, chatting to someone at the bus stop or the supermarket is just not happening so much anymore because people are locked away in their phones. And so I think what to me will be exciting is when the phones suddenly start sort of just being phones rather than being an entire life. And so sort of people can start just randomly chatting again.
What a different place that would be.
Sort of like my childhood, I suppose.
Yeah, but in some ways similar to my childhood. I liken what you've just said there to a thought I have around boredom. I don't hear people say they're bored anymore.
No.
And I'm not saying it was a great state or place to be in, but you realise that actually in that state of boredom, you either stay in that state of boredom or you go and do something or you speak to somebody. Mm. I think, you know, the mobile phones have replaced boredom with something equally as useless, which is, you know, constant flicking of a screen and not being, you know, available or aware of what's going on in the moment. So yeah, I'm smiling to myself as you're describing that, because actually that's the bit that, you know, gives me so much energy on a daily, weekly basis is having conversations with people that I wouldn't normally, you know, have a conversation with. Now, I have to accept that some of that has come about because of social media, but I am having real conversations with real people that I don't know, and I'm amazed by what's going on in people's worlds when I'm able to have those conversations.
Mm. I mean, because everyone has a story, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's always really interesting, and you don't hear it if you're locked away. And you don't look for it either because you're listening to a podcast and you're hearing their story on the podcast. So in a sense, your mind is expanding that way. But in a sense, your life is contracting because it becomes you and your phone. I mean, the one thing that has sort of, well, I mean, obviously there are wonderful things about the phone. But I mean, I remember always feeling that it would be a good idea to do something every day in terms of your boredom. And I think sort of things like Instagram have inspired me. I mean, not that I use Instagram really, but have inspired me to take a photograph every day or something like that, so that you know, so that I'm definitely doing something creative every day. And I think that can be a good thing, that everyone now has a camera, which in the past people didn't have cameras. They had to, you know, only people who were in that world probably had a camera. So it's there are millions of good things about phones, but they can, I think if you ask me what am I looking forward to, I'm looking forward to having random conversations again.
I love that. Now, Nina, I have what I call some 60-second quick fire questions.
Ooh, okay.
Towards the end of each of my guest interviews. And this is really just to give the listeners a slightly different insight from each of my guests. So are you happy to answer some quick fire questions?
Of course.
Okay. First one up then. Who or what inspires you the most?
I think it's probably the what. I think I love listening to my own thoughts and putting things together. I make lots of connections in my brain and I find that very, very exciting. So that's probably it. It's just having the time and the solitude to be able to think.
I love that. I don't think any of my guests have ever said that before. but I love that. Okay, three guests to have to dinner, past or present.
Yeah, I absolutely love spending time with my children, but I'm sure all your guests say that. So I would say I like comedy. Comedy really relaxes me. I've just finished watching Frankie and Grace, or Grace and Frankie, which I very much enjoy. Just something to kind of make you feel different every night. So when I was young, my two favourite comedians were Spike Milligan and Danny Kaye. So I might ask them. And then a comedian that I like now, maybe Chelsea Peretti. She was in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So I might ask her. So that would be my evening.
What a cracking evening that's going to be.
Let's hope so.
A guilty pleasure, should you view it that way, which you do when you have some time to yourself?
Well, chocolate is definitely a guilty pleasure. Well, probably just a pleasure, actually. It is definitely makes me feel guilty. And I love watching things on television. I love watching Netflix. There's a series that just finished called Project Runway, which is about fashion design, which I absolutely love. It's a sort of knockout show about fashion designers. So that's definitely sort of lying on the sofa, not eating chocolate at that time, but watching a film or a Project Runway are guilty pleasures, definitely. That's my Saturday.
Fab. A book or a podcast that you would recommend?
Well, I tend to read novels, and one of my favourite writers is Anne Tyler. And as my children once said, "Mum, how can you read a book which has in it things like people going to the supermarket?" But she is just wonderful at noticing the small things that happen to all of us in our lives. And the very first book of hers that I read, which my brother-in-law gave me, is a book called Patchwork Planet. And it's just gentle and romantic and sweet, and it's a lovely concept. Actually, it's about people starting a sort of service for elderly people in the neighborhood who just want a picture hung, or you know, a shower curtain put up or something, just little things. It's just a really delightful book, so I would definitely recommend that.
Okay, good stuff. What's your one tip for improving overall well-being?
I think sleep. Sleep is, I mean, you know, when you're jet lagged or when you've just had a baby and you just don't sleep, you realise how absolutely detrimental it is not to have sleep. So, yeah, sleep, or listening to your body. What's your body telling you to do? Is it telling you to eat, not eat, sleep, not sleep, stretch, not stretch? I mean, I think that's very important as well. So those two things.
Okay, good stuff. Nina, I've got three final questions. Who would you recommend as a future guest on the show?
Gosh, well, I remember you asking me that earlier, and it's hard to say because I really don't know. But I mean, three people who I really respect at the moment are Lucy Kellaway, who used to be a journalist, or still is really a journalist on the Financial Times, and has started sort of helping people teach at the end of their careers. And I think that's incredible. There's someone called Vanessa Valelli who runs something called sort of Women in the City, or We Are the City. She's great. So those two, I would say, would be really wonderful people.
Fabulous. How can the listeners find out more about you and what you're doing?
Well, probably the best place to go to is just our website, which is lifeclubs.com. I always say it's life as the opposite of death, and clubs where we go dancing in the plural, and .com. So just or .co.uk, whichever one you want, just to give them a little mnemonic.
Okay, and one final takeaway for the listeners.
Well, I suppose the obvious thing would be if you're near a club, do come along, or at least we've got a free webinar on the sort of video on the website. So definitely listen, watch that. It's fun and it will give you a real clue as to what we do and how we make you feel and think. And otherwise, I always set three intentions for the day, three things that I'm going to achieve that day. And that really helps me, focus and helps me get a bit more out of my life. So, yeah, just three things you want to do that day.
What a great tip and takeaway for the listeners. Nina, thank you very much indeed for taking some time out to come on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to spend more time with you. So thank you very much indeed.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. Take care.
You too. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
What an absolute treat and pleasure to be able to spend some time with Nina. So much energy and enthusiasm for helping others. Now, if you want to find out more details about Nina and Life Clubs in particular, please do check out the show notes where you can find links to Nina and Life Clubs on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook and Instagram. Alternatively, you can also find out more details by reading the latest Ignite blog. More details as well can be found on Life Clubs via their website. Again, the link is in the show notes. If you'd enjoyed this episode, please do leave the show a rating and a review on iTunes. Check out all the episodes to date and join me next time as I share the final episode of Series 4 with the superb guest Chris Lovett, leadership coach, DJ, music man, and minimalist. Until then, remember this. When you have a balance, enjoy it. When you've got an imbalance, embrace it. For in those moments we're striving towards achieving our next success, increasing our happiness, or looking for greater fulfillment. Bye for now.